Justice Conway is fighting the tax man.
My goal is just to survive the never-ending battle.
And finally reached his breaking point with Justin McGuire.
Water all over that thing.
There's no room for irresponsibility.
And so we had to ask Justin to leave.
Motherfucker.
While in Alaska, Marty's machine problems are getting the better of his season. He's been shut out, and time is getting short.
That solitude and that loneliness, too much of it, that's when it really gets tough.
And in Montana, Tom Orr finally found some food for the dinner table.
That was a good shot.
But not enough to last the winter.
If you're not prepared for winter, you don't survive.
In the Yaak Valley of Montana, Tom Orr continues his battle with the harsh winter that already brought 20 inches of snowfall.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, hey, sweetie.
How are you?
How are
you?
Good. How are you?
Good. You guys staying warm?
We're working on it.
Yeah.
Just kind of wanted to run something by you. Dad, I know the winters are so harsh up there, and maybe you should consider, you know, coming and staying with Chad and I. Maybe retire and relax a little bit. You deserve it.
Living off the land isn't easy, and Tom's daughter Keely has been calling recently, talking about it being time for a change.
She's pushing for Nancy and I to come to Florida and live in Florida. I don't know how long I'll be able to do what I'm doing, but I feel better in the woods than around people. It's hard for me to go to the city now.
Take some time to think about it. It might be just a little bit easier for you. The only reason we're asking, Dad, is because we love you so much and we want what's best for you.
I don't know. It's probably time to think about that. I got to come up with some kind of answer for the kids.
The day's mail brings a welcome distraction.
There was a letter from my brother that invited Will and I to come down and do some hawking with him, some falconry. We're not getting any younger, and neither are you. Hell, it's been 15 years since I've done that with him. That'd be a good thing to do. Like he says, we're not getting any younger. You always want to go down there in the winter and watch him fly his birds, but usually I've got traps out, and it's just hard to do. It's getting to be that time. I mean, can't stay here forever.
So while Tom prepares to hit the road, 2,500 miles away in the northern Alaskan mountains, Marty Maiorato's early winter has been plagued by machine problems. And so far, he's been shut out on the trap line.
Sometimes the reception's real bad for some reason. So chatter'll come on right after this.
Isolated and alone, he has spent the last 3 months in his trapping cabin, away from his family, with an AM radio as his only form of communication.
That solitude and that loneliness, too much of it is really bad. I mean, humans are a herd animal. They need humans. They need input.
Trapline Chatter is a radio broadcast that allows family and friends to communicate with those who live in Alaska's remote areas. This is Marty's only connection to the outside world.
And to Marty Maiorato on the trapline from Dominica Two Rivers. Hi, sweetie. Hope the weather stays nice so you can make it in for Noah's recital this weekend. Stay warm and be safe. Love and miss you, Dominique and Noah Jane.
This is a big day for Noah, and Marty wouldn't miss it for the world.
For me to get back to this recital is important.
So far today, the weather has been clear for Marty, but with a bush plane as his only form of transportation, flying home is still a matter of life and death. Hopefully, the weather will hold.
Next order of business is to gear up and go check some traps. It's about 20 below out there.
Everything in Alaska is more difficult. Even something simple like turning a key where zipping a coat becomes an excruciating process.
If you get to a certain point cold, you're helpless.
You lose these babies, you're not gonna get a fire going.
Yeah, these are beaver gloves. They're just, it's beaver fur gloves.
Once you can't get a fire going, you better keep moving because it starts freezing. And as soon as it freezes, it just kills the flesh.
I'm gonna fire up my machine and head out and go check some traps, get some fur maybe.
When it gets this cold, trapping becomes even more dangerous. Frozen trees and bushes become frigid weapons that Mother Nature wields like swords. Running into one could mean being impaled.
There's so many sticks and brush that hang in the trail, and I just gotta watch it so I don't get a stick poking in my eye.
But Marty has no choice but to keep checking traps.
All right, this is the first set I'm gonna check. These are the guide sticks, and the trap's obviously right there. That's my bait, just a piece of caribou hide. No fur yet, but I have many, many, many of these to check today, so I better get rolling.
That's the day you just go from one trap to the next.
Marty has 150 traps to check over 10 miles before dark. And the temperatures have plummeted to 40 below.
No fur yet. Off to the next one. You have a couple hours of light. That's all you get.
Due to all the breakdowns of his snowmobile, Marty hasn't been able to check his traps regularly.
Oh, sh! Nothing! Boy, it's been a long day with no fur.
The biggest problem with not checking his traps regularly is he's losing out to scavengers.
A pack of wolves came through. Wolves are the smartest thing going. They're real powerful. I wouldn't want to have a pack of wolves circling me and I didn't have a gun. That would be nerve-wracking.
Wolves are particularly dangerous scavengers because they hunt in packs. Alaskan gray wolves weigh as much as 145 pounds, and they can run up to 35 miles per hour.
Could see the rest of the pack milling around in the woods just close by. Pack of wolves could come after you. They're a worthy adversary, that's for sure.
Marty is behind on his trapping. And with the wolves so active, he's forced to end his day early. But Alaska always has a say in what a man does.
Oh,
another breakdown means that Marty must fix the machine quickly or risk missing his flight window.
My gut feeling is probably won't make it.
While Marty battles the snow, 4,300 miles away, high in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, Eustace Conway is facing a lien against his 1,000-acre property. But his work is never done.
Yeah, we're improving the building today. We're making it a little stronger. The log's settled. You can see this one little board is holding it up. See where my hand is? That's just air holding up the whole top of the building.
The barn was built by stacking logs on top of each other. There is nothing holding them together. Preston and Eustace must fix the barn or risk having it fall on his livestock.
This barn is what we call the nursery barn. And so a lot of times we keep our young livestock here and our pregnant mares here. So basically it's to keep our livestock healthy, this log building.
I'm kind of like a bit of a handyman. I've been here since the beginning, kind of Eustace's right-hand man.
It's really nice to have Preston's help, not just as physical help on the site, but just as a friend.
The barn shifted due to high winds during a recent storm. To fix the problem, Eustace and Preston must first remove a series of rusted nails from the decaying boards. Then they'll replace them with new ones made of black locust, along with new pegs and beams to strengthen the barn's foundation.
We're going to pull these nails out and pull this board out and put actual logs, something more substantial, a lot more rot-resistant, a black locust tree. Locust is so rot-resistant.
Where did you come up with this locust?
I got this up on the hillside.
The getting place?
Yeah, the getting place.
That black locust wood's really alive, you know. It stays alive for a long time, and so it will just stay there with the rest of the wood as long as the rest of the building's intact.
Using a little mountain man ingenuity, the next step is trimming and leveling the top part of the barn.
Hopefully the thing won't fall over on us, you know.
Once the barn is level, they'll use a 2x4 to create a simple lever to raise the crossbeam.
using a piece of wood and timber that can split, break, crack, pop. You know, a lot of times it'll just slide off of the fulcrum point.
I said, you gotta be careful. If this pops off, it'll knock you.
Lifting the barn falls to Preston because Eustace has caught an early winter cold.
Either go back to bed or take a sauna. Not too easy being sick. Sometimes you just have to cowboy up and work when you're sick. You know, it's a common habit for traditional people.
Not being at full strength isn't ideal when each beam weighs as much as 300 pounds.
Yeah, working on a building like this, you always have to be aware of the height and the mass of it. When you start shifting an entire building around and moving the weight of it, you have to watch out, make sure it doesn't fall on you or something like that.
Oh, gosh. That thing might pop. Well, that thing was really cocking over on me. We good?
Yes, looking good as far as I can tell.
Eustace and Preston have one final step. They must separate the beams and add one final block of wood without the rest of the logs collapsing on them.
Now your pry bar can slip, you know, it can pop out of there.
You're getting it to wiggle, you're getting some pressure off of it there.
Yeah, these logs are just all stacked one on top of another. There's nothing to hold them in place. We could just have those logs could just all of a sudden buckle with all that weight, could just spread apart. Down comes the building.
Oh, my God.
Appalachia has always been home to legend and myth. The region is home to more ingenuity than almost any other in America. Eustace Conway settled here over 20 years ago and built himself a sanctuary from the world around him. But like all men who live off the land, he's constantly in maintenance mode.
When you start shifting an entire building around and moving the weight of it, you have to watch out, make sure it doesn't pinch you or fall on you. You can kill yourself when making the wrong decision.
Those logs could just all of a sudden buckle with all that weight. Boom, down comes the building.
I think you got it.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. We can go ahead and put our end caps on now.
Winter has been a challenge for Eustace. But right now, his biggest challenge is a fierce cold.
Now, Eustace has a tendency to keep pushing himself. What he does is instead of resting and taking care of himself, is he just digs in and pushes a little bit harder.
With Preston handling the day's chores, Eustace is free to look for a cure. He's determined to find a local remedy for his sickness called yellow root. It grows in the ground by the river, but finding it is not easy.
If the stuff blooms early and freezes, it's all gonna die. The freeze is gonna kill it, kill the blossoms, kill the seed.
The powerful antibiotic has been used by the Cherokee for centuries as a cure for the common cold.
The yellow root makes a good medicine. It'll help heal me a little bit, give me a little boost, old medicinal plant.
While Eustace is deep in the woods, Preston's not too excited about his next chore.
I reckon Eustace has trained those horses to do that. Poop on command. Well, I'm tired of doing Eustace's work for him. I'll be glad when he's better.
But Preston knows that if he doesn't keep on top of the day's work, it will mean there's more to do tomorrow. So while Preston begins loading a firewood delivery, Eustace's search for yellow root continues.
It usually just has a twig kind of like this, but that's not it.
The Cherokee call yellow root Dalanai. And while it can be used to fight infection, too much of it can be toxic.
That looks like yellow root. It's beautiful that you can go out, if you have the knowledge, go out and get some of the wild plants and heal yourself with them. It's free. It's just sitting out there growing.
Eustace is careful not to take too much.
Man, yellow root, yellow teeth. Yeah, nothing wrong with yellow teeth if it'll heal you, right?
While Eustace is deep in the woods, 2,100 miles west, Tom Orr and his friend Will are close to his brother Jack's ranch in Howe, Idaho, after 8 hours on the road.
Here's the turnoff right here.
My brother's lifestyle is a little different than mine.
My name's Jack, and Tom Orr is my brother. I moved out here because I like wild places. Hardly any people get in the way. Living out here where you could get eaten by a grizzly bear. It keeps your senses sharper.
I maybe should have brought my old Bronc saddle, huh? Looked like a bunch of Broncs.
The Orr brothers grew up in Illinois. Their dad taught them to ride horses before they could even walk. And neither of them could have ever imagined living any other lifestyle.
Last time you and me rode together, Dad was with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a picture. The last time my dad was here, the three of us went for a ride.
Hell, that was the first time the three of us have rode horses together in probably 30 years.
Yeah, your dad looked younger than you two.
Yeah, we look older than you.
Well, I bet your dad will be with us today.
He's here.
He's here. Yep. He's here.
All right, let's get this up a horse.
Jack spotted a mountain lion lurking on the edge of the property last week. And with 10 horses on his farm, he's worried about the cat getting too close.
Okay, guys, let's check the fence here. See what it looks like. I've cut some tracks of lions there at the mouth of Sawmill.
The only option is to mount up and see if they can push them back into the hills.
So what about these horses, Jack? You got them all warmed up and ready for us?
They're ready for you, but I don't know if you're ready for them.
Tom and Jack, they're both some of the most knowledgeable and tough guys I've ever known.
Mountain lions are opportunity predators, meaning they like to ambush their prey. So if Tom, Jack, and Will spot the animal first, they will be in no danger.
Well, I can't quite remember the last time I was even on a horse, you know?
The only problematic part of the search could be the horses.
These colts could break apart any time and go to bucking or running off.
Hey, you nervous, buddy?
As soon as I could smell them, I got a little nervous. Yeah. These are pretty inexperienced colts we're going to be getting on today. So we put the youngest rider on the worst horse.
I think it was a year and a half ago, I was riding this horse that all of a sudden he started kind of a bucking. I bailed off that horse and I broke my pelvis. It took me a while to get back on it.
The short ride to the foothills where the cat was spotted should only take a half hour.
You never know what's going to happen on horseback. Oh, oh, buddy. Ah, sucker. Ooh. Hey, guys, might want to wait a minute.
You having trouble?
Yeah, a little bit.
That level set off the bay, too.
Let's not even talk about it.
With Will's horse finally turned around, the group continues the search. Meanwhile, 2,800 miles northwest, Marty Maiorato is dealing with his latest snowmobile problem of the season.
Oh, sh! It was the wind. I got a lot of drift. So lots of places, the trail's just gone. I can't even see it. And it makes it pretty tough.
With the snowmobile stuck, Marty could be at risk.
There's a lot of wolves out here. They can be potentially dangerous. If I want to see my wife and daughter again, I need to get out of here. I have to do everything I can to get this thing fixed. Okay, here we go.
Fortunately, Marty is able to get his snowmobile in working order and back on the trail. But Marty's biggest problem of the season has been his inability to check his traps. He's confident he lost out to local scavengers. He needs to start trapping something, or he'll run the risk of a lost season.
Well, last
last set of the day. Well, there's something here. It's tore up anyways. I don't see anything. Maybe something got away or a rabbit. No, this is a Martin. You know, he got caught in a lynx set, so it's a, you know, the trap's big for him.
The catch is Marty's first of the season.
But whenever you kill something, there's always a little remorse. And that's good. I mean, if you killed something and you didn't have that, I think that's unhealthy. But still, I am a predator.
A small prize, but it's a start.
Well, we've probably come better than 20 miles. I wouldn't want to have to run that many miles to catch one Martin all the time.
One Pine Martin might bring $100. That won't cover a fraction of Marty's expenses.
It was a crappy trapping day, pretty much. I'm done.
Marty's slow season means the last thing he should be doing is heading home.
Well, I wanted to get out, I wanted to fly today, was the plan. My gut feeling is probably won't make it.
But he wants to get back to see his daughter's first ballet recital. But the question is whether or not the weather will cooperate. There's long been a debate about the origins of the name Idaho. Some believe the word was derived from the Shoshone. Others believe it to be the Comanche word for enemy. Many think it was simply an invention of the early English settlers.
Well, that's quite a view you got here, Jack.
Yeah, really.
Perhaps the state should go by another of its names, the Gem State.
When you're checking the fence, you're just looking for loose wires and place where a mountain lion crossed the fence.
Tom Orr traveled here from Montana to see his brother Jack. The brothers, accompanied by Tom's neighbor Will, are headed out to the foothills to try to drive a troublesome mountain lion off Jack's property.
The neighbor was telling me he saw four last year out in one of his pastures.
So it seemed like a lot of life and death situations out on the prairie here, huh?
Almost as dangerous as living in town.
We're following you there, Bob.
Lions are always sneaking and following. They'll actually spot you and curious, and they'll come up to you. I mean, I know people that have had lions actually stalk them.
I heard of a guy lost a colt to a mountain lion down valley here.
Lions like horse meat.
I heard that.
Hell, get out of here.
There goes my back.
Okay, you can breathe now.
At least can't see that brown stain.
Not till you get off.
Yeah.
With the lion headed into the foothills, the Orrs talk about the life of a mountain man.
As far as getting older and everything, why? I don't know, you just have to keep on going. You get parts that hurt, but it's just like anything else. The cowboy way is you just keep trying and working at it.
Well, I guess sooner or later we got to just retire and just sit on the porch and rock and read the paper or something, huh? Think that's ever going to happen?
I told my wife, I'm sitting out on the porch and she has to come out and wipe the drool off my chin, that it's time to tell me to get on the horse and take that pistol up in the mountains and send the horse back when I'm done.
While the crew heads back to the ranch, 2,100 miles to the east, in the Appalachian Mountains of North Carolina, Eustace Conway has hiked deep into the woods with a vicious cold. He's been searching for yellow root, an ancient Cherokee remedy.
That looks like yellow root.
If I got my instant fix by chewing on a fresh root. So we got a little bit more in depth with it by boiling some of the roots down and making a tea.
To make the tea, Eustace will mix the yellow root with water over an open fire. A traditional method that dates back thousands of years.
I'm just smashing these roots up a little bit. It'll be a good, strong tea.
Just a good thing to stimulate a body.
Daylight is fading, and Eustace still has a load of firewood to deliver.
Working when you're sick, you know, it can be dangerous. You kill yourself when making the wrong decision. This yellow root will help. It'll sort of make me feel better. But hopefully, it'll all give me a little more time so I won't die. I bet that stuff is going to be tongue-twisting. If it doesn't kill you, it'll cure you, huh?
That yellow root just tastes so terrible. This bitter, it'll make your head shake, I tell you.
That's some mountain man medicine right there, boys.
The final ingredient to cure Eustace's sickness employs a method used by Native Americans for generations, the sweat lodge, or sauna.
Go into the sauna and heat my old bones up, try to push some of this sickness out of me.
Sweating that toxin out, I think, is really helpful.
I'm stiff with all this cold in me. It's important to take care of yourself. You know, that's sort of the way we were supposed to originally anyway, is to take care of ourselves.
With the yellow root tea already taking effect, Eustace will head into the sweat lodge to knock out the rest of the sickness. And Eustace does a chant designed to connect him to Mother Nature. Even sick, there's only so much heat a man can take.
I think I'll head out and get in that cold water a little bit. You get really hot in there in the sauna, and you get out here and you get really cool in that cold water. It cools you down. Woo! Oh, nothing like cooling off in ice cold water now. Woo! Well, I think I might feel better.
After another couple of rounds in the sweat lodge, Eustace is healthy enough to get back to work. 4,300 miles away in the northern Alaskan mountains, another day has brought another storm. It's not good news for Marty, who was hoping to fly home today.
The weather's not cooperating. You see the kind of sleeting snow coming through. All I can do is fire the plane, get it ready, and just see how it develops. In the case I get a window, I can fly.
This looks like crap. It seems my whole life revolves around what Mother Nature will and won't let me do.
With the runway covered in this much snow, even if the weather breaks, taking off will be difficult.
Well, I might as well pack the runway a little bit, get the runway packed and smooth, or as smooth as I can make it for this thing.
Like many pilots captaining bush planes in Alaska, Marty flies without instruments to guide him. So even if he gets off the ground, the flight would be treacherous.
The biggest challenge of getting home is just having the weather to get there, you know. If you can't see where you're going, you can't fly, because mountains hide in clouds. And these planes ain't made to fly into mountains.
Weighing a combined 685 pounds, Marty and the snowmobile are able to compact the snow and harden the runway. But after six trips up and down, the short Alaskan day means light is rapidly fading.
I can't fly at night. You lose sight of the horizon, you're going to get vertigo and you're going to crash. If you can't see the ground, you're in a lot of trouble.
As night draws near and the storm worsens, Marty will have to decide, is the flight worth the risk?
All we can do is see how what's going to happen.
In the remote region of Alaska, Marty Maiorato needs to fly home to see his daughter's ballet recital.
I can see that far hill. That's got to be 5 miles away. Not too bad.
The question is, with just a few hours of daylight left, can he make it?
All right, looks like I'm gonna try it. But I'm getting real close to the whole go, no-go time. It's gonna be 12:30, and it gets dark at 3:30, so got about 3 hours. And if it's rough, I turn around and come back.
Marty's got a name for these kinds of flights.
This looks like a white-knuckle scud run, and I ain't into those.
The path Marty will take over the first mountain pass means he may be facing headwinds of up to 80 miles an hour.
Give it a little prime, mixture full rich, crack the throttle, and fire in the hole. When you take off and go flying in Alaska, you have to be a little more aware of what's going on as far as the weather goes. It can start raining, it can start snowing, clouds can come down. A lot of punches that you can get nailed with if you're not careful. If something does happen, you're in a lot of trouble.
Oh, yeah!
Almost as soon as he's airborne, Marty's starting to rethink his decision.
Winter storm warning in effect for the next 72 hours. To travel will be dangerous and nearly impossible. Out in the northwest will bring strong gale force winds causing whiteout conditions.
Woo! Well, if you look up ahead, it doesn't look that great. So we'll try and sneak our way through.
The headwinds have slowed Marty dramatically since takeoff. He's already behind schedule, so he needs to get through the mountain pass.
This doesn't work. I'm screwed. I'm going to do everything I can to get there, but I didn't think I was gonna make it.
While Marty struggles to reach his family, 2,800 miles southeast at the base of the Sawtooth Mountains in Idaho, Tom Orr, his brother Jack, and friend Will have chased a large mountain lion into the foothills. With the cat gone, they'll be able to hunt in a unique fashion. Jack is a falcon trainer.
This is the falcon that'll be flying today.
Working in tandem with a dog on the ground, the bird will dive bomb other birds like grouse, plunging their talons into their prey. The dog will then retrieve the birds and bring them to Jack.
All right, Helen, see what you weigh today.
After hooding the airborne predator to keep it from attacking during transport, Jack must weigh it to ensure it can take on bigger grouse.
Sage grouse will go 10, 11 pounds. Hefty weighted game for a 3-pound falcon to knock out of the air.
Knowing the bird can hunt, they head out.
There's a set of grouse tracks here. We may have a point.
Jack can sell trained falcons for up to $10,000. This means he must be careful with the bird to ensure that it has enough recovery time after its high-speed attacks.
Oh, he's up pretty good. There they go. Okay.
Falcons can reach speeds of up to 200 miles per hour when they are attacking.
Oh, she missed.
This exertion of energy means they tire quickly.
Whoa. Missed again. Tom, did you see that?
Yeah.
That was wild, Jack.
To see those falcons fall out of that sky and then go after a bird is just fantastic. I loved it.
Using a lure pad, Jack calls the bird back in. The hunt is over for the day.
Hey, that's worth the whole damn trip down here, wasn't it, just to see that?
I told you.
I think we'll quit for today.
Oh, that was great.
Been a long time since I've seen hawks fly.
But even though the hunt came up empty, it gave Tom some needed perspective on his daughter's plea for him to join her in Florida.
We're getting up there in age, so I don't know how much longer we'll be able to do this, you know? It's getting to be that time.
While the crew heads back to the ranch, 2,100 miles to the east, Eustace Conway has gotten over his cold and is getting back to work, delivering a load of firewood so he can pay off a lien on his land. Preston's truck has a blown transmission, and in order to get it repaired, Eustace must get it to a place where it can be towed.
are taking my land. I have to get that truck fixed and deliver more firewood.
Using a little mountain man ingenuity, he hitches the 5-ton truck to a couple of workhorses.
We got the horses, hitch them up on that bad boy, and we're going to try pulling a truck with it. I'm a little bit worried about how we're gonna do some of this, and we'll just have to see how it goes. It's a bit dangerous.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Good boy. Good boy. Even with the truck not able to get into gear, the horses can kick it into gear, you know? I say go, and they go. They haven't lost their transmission.
Good boy.
While the idea might seem genius, execution is extremely dangerous.
If he gives them a command to stop before I'm ready to stop, well, I run into the horses and we're gonna have a wreck.
You ready to stop it, Preston?
It used to stop those horses on a dime, and I was just like pushing it all I had to stop that good thing. I couldn't get it to stop. It was close.
Jesus, I can't stop this truck with it not running and stuff. I'm liable to hit these horses.
Yeah, it's cutting it too close when that thing rolled up and nearly hit him in the ass.
Eustace can't afford to injure one of his horses. He decides he might have better control from the cab.
Okay. And look, Woods. Go ahead. Good boy. Good boy. Yeah, that's my good boy.
Just all in the day in the life of a mountain man, right?
Good boys. Go ahead. Good boys. We're almost there, Preston.
Only one hill remains between Eustace and the road.
Before we go up that last hill, you see there's a couple of bumps there, and that's going to make it hard on them, too.
We got a heck of a hill coming up. That's a lot of weight to be toting up that hill. I don't think that we can do it.
The hill is a huge obstacle, but Eustace is out of options.
Come up, boy. Basically, it's a dance with disaster right on the edge. That frozen ground's hard on them, isn't it?
High in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, Eustace Conway has been battling sickness and a lien on his property. Now, his firewood delivery truck is stuck at the bottom of a hill.
Before we go up that last hill, you see there's a couple of bumps there, and that's going to make it hard on them, too.
We got a heck of a hill coming up. That's a lot of weight to be toting up that hill.
Eustace's horses are exhausted, but he needs to make this delivery on time.
Man, come up, boy. That frozen ground's hard on them, isn't it?
One wrong move with this much weight could be a disaster.
Good boy.
But it's nothing some good old horsepower can't overcome.
Let's stop them, Whit. Good boys. Well done, Preston. Good job, team. You guys pulled good on that.
I was able to get those horses to pull the truck down the road, and Preston was able to steer it, and we were able to make it back up to the shop to where we could work on it.
It's a good thing he still got his horses. They don't break down so bad.
While Eustace and Preston finish fixing up the truck, the horses can finally get some rest. But for a mountain man like Eustace, there's always more work to be done. 4,300 miles away in the Alaskan wilderness, Marty Maiorato is trying to get home.
Oh, yeah!
While Alaska is the largest state in the country, it has only 725,000 residents. A population smaller than every state except for Vermont, Wyoming, and North Dakota. This means there are massive tracts of wilderness with no human contact.
There's no one there. It's just wilderness the way it's been forever.
To live here almost necessitates travel by small planes, most of which have no navigational equipment.
But we're losing life fast! Things go bad, we'll land there!
Flying by sight has obvious problems. Marty Maiorato is experiencing them as he tries to navigate a final mountain pass on his way home.
I got to the top of the pass, and I couldn't see down the other side, where I thought, this is it. I'm going to be dead here in a few seconds.
This is called flying by the seat of your pants.
And I knew I was either going to see the ground and pull out, or I was going to fly into the ground. And then I just happened to look, and boom, I could see that it was clear down there. So I decided to go for it.
We just barely got through.
Marty makes it through. Just as the weather system engulfs the mountain pass in a combination of heavy sleet and snow. If he'd been there 3 minutes later, he wouldn't have made it.
So I always like to buzz the house, fly over the house, and then see my girls coming out. Feel like, yeah, job well done, Marty, you got it.
Well, we made it!
It's good to see her. Good to see both my girls.
...2,800 miles southwest in Idaho, Tom Orr's trip to his brother Jack's ranch is coming to an end. Tom is still struggling with the decision to leave his mountain life behind.
On this trip to see my brother, I don't know, you think about how old we're getting, how much longer we'll be able to do this.
Didn't even warm us up very much with all the wind blowing, did it?
Got warmed up cutting it in the woods and bringing it here, too.
We have to do a lot more things that most people in the city don't have to do. I mean, we go out and we gather our own firewood, and we get lots of our own wild meat, you know. It's a whole different lifestyle than the city.
What's the deal with the coon?
Would you like to take him home?
Yeah, I'll skin him. Yeah, he's got nice fur on him yet.
All right, he's yours.
Us fur takers always got to take advantage of fur.
My kids keep saying to come to Florida, you know, live with them in Florida. You know, I don't know.
This is pretty nice, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, this is great.
My brother is probably as close to a mountain man as you can get today. Tom chose this lifestyle, I think, because he could.
Seems that no matter how old you get, no one knows you better than your brother.
I don't think my brother's ever going to quit and move to the city.
Cities are where you die.
Tom's a hero to me. He always has been. You know, no matter what he does in life, he's a cowboy.
How much longer you reckon we're going to be able to do this horseback stuff, bud?
I'm going to do it as long as I can see over the dirt.
As long as you don't got dirt in your eyes, right?
All right. My God, I'll be with you, I think.
You might as well.
I love being a mountain man. It's just the way of life that I dug, and I just went to it, you know?
Giving it up would be hard for anyone, especially for Tom Orr.
Oh, the trip to Jackson, it was good to think about and everything, but I'll be a mountain man until the day I die.
If anybody tries to take that away from me, it's going to be one hell of a fight, I'll tell you that.
Next time on Mountain Men.
Now, these look like they could be wolf tracks.
Tom tries to avoid becoming the one being hunted.
These wolves have no fear of people. They can kill a person.
And Eustace has to bring out the horses again, but this time with very different results.
You better do something.
If you think I can. He didn't even realize that he didn't really know how to hold and manage that horse.